Hey guys, welcome back to Bloodshed and Bagels, where we sit down and talk about true crime cases while enjoying our morning bagel. I'm your host, Heather, and well, I don't want to bore you with nonsense, so let's get right to it. This week's case theme is poison. Let's see what I found. Orville Lynn Majors was born April 24, 1961, in Linton, Indiana. As a teen, he grew up taking care of his grandmother, and this is what led him to go into nursing. He graduated from Nashville Memorial School of Practical Nursing in 1989 and took a job at Vermilion County Hospital, or VCH, in Clinton, Indiana. He would actually leave this position, but find his way back in a few years. From about May 1993 to May 95, he worked as a nurse at VCH, overseeing hundreds of patients. In March 1995, Detective Frank Turchi with the Indiana State Police Department was contacted by Chief Jerry Stadler of the Clinton Police Department and asked to meet with Joe Beardsley, who was the attorney of VCH, and John Ling, the hospital administrator. Detective Turchi met with them on two occasions regarding an independent study conducted by Don Sturrock, who was the director of the intensive care unit at VCH. The purpose of the investigation was an abnormal mortality rate in the ICU. Don had prepared a summary that provides information going back to 1990, showing the number of deaths each year. Those numbers were 1990, 29 deaths, 1991, 24 deaths, 1992, 25 deaths, 1993, 31 deaths, and 1994, 101 deaths. Wow, that escalated quickly. So the total admissions for those same years were 1990, 394 admitted, 91, 324 admitted, 92, 356 admitted, 93, 341 were admitted, and 94, 351 were admitted. So the number of admissions was relatively the same over the 5 years, but the number of deaths had increased substantially in 1994, which is what prompted the study conducted by Don. The study also included the hours worked by each person in the ICU and the number of deaths that had occurred during each employee's shift. Now, she noticed the majority of the deaths happened while one employee was on his shift. That employee was Orville Majors. In fact, in 1994, there was a death about every 20 hours that Orville was working. Now, based off this information, the Indiana State Police decided to start a massive investigation. They attempted to determine if the number of deaths was actually excessive and if the deaths could be attributed to criminal acts. For this investigation, they decided to call an independent epidemiology specialist, Dr. Stephen Lamb. After reviewing the patient files and records from 1991 to 96, he found that the mortality rate reached epidemic proportions from July 1994 to December 1994. Only one nurse was very strongly associated with that mortality rate. There was no one else that came even close to the number of deaths associated with them. Dr. Lamb's study concluded that there were no other factors that could attribute to the excess of deaths during that time frame. It showed that the likelihood of death was 42.96% higher than normal if Orville was on the clock. Investigation of the hospital records indicated that during July 1994 through December of the same year, 67 people died in the ICU. And Orville was working when 63 of them had died. During his entire career at VCH, a death occurred basically every 23.1 hours while Orville was working. And then when he was off the clock, a death occurred every 551.6 hours. That's roughly one every 23 days. That's insane. Sadly, it seemed like it was common knowledge that people knew there were excessive deaths that happened when Orville was working, and they just chose not to say anything. Marilyn Alexander, a nurse that worked with Orville in the ICU, first noticed the increase in deaths back in October of 1993. She even documented the number of deaths and when they occurred on her personal calendar. She stopped in 1994 when she no longer worked with Orville. What? Like, why would you not say something? And the first time it was brought to the attention of Judy Howard, director of nursing, was October 11th, 1994, when Debbie Solers became concerned of the increasing deaths. Another nurse, Sharon Calvert, went to Dr. Elias, concerned about her own abilities as a nurse, because of the increasing rate of death in December 1994 during her shifts. She stated that it seemed odd that the patients that were dying had respiratory arrest and then arrhythmia. Based on her previous experience, she felt it should be reversed. Nurse Martha Starkey said the increase in deaths was a matter that was actually joked about, and Orville was the focus of attention concerning the deaths. There's also a report of the night shift nurses making bets on who would die next during Orville's shift. Excuse me? Jokes and bets? These are people's lives and loved ones that are dying. How is that something to joke about? There are so many of these reports from other nurses, x-ray techs, ER staffs, yet nothing was ever done about it. Several reports were given of him being left alone in the ICU with patients to give them their medications. No one ever said a word. The investigators reviewed files for 147 patients that died in ICU during the 22 months that Orville worked there. It seemed that most of the patients that died went very suddenly and unexpectedly. They would seem fine, be improving and stable, then suddenly just die. The medical team identified a certain pattern of the people that died when Orville was working. There was a widening of the QRS complex on the EKG strips, and the pattern also showed a spike in blood pressure. And these patients had no previous history of high blood pressure. According to medical personnel, there are a few substances that could have been injected that would cause these symptoms. Potassium can suppress electrical activity in the heart and can be detected by the widening of the QRS complex on the EKG strips. And epinephrine can suddenly increase a patient's blood pressure. Sharon Calvert and Marty Brown told investigators that in July 1994, Orville seemed to completely change. He started out being very irritable, then almost uncontrollably irate when things didn't go his way or even when someone criticized him. In January of 1995, Tony Towle was installing a new furnace at Fin and Feathers, a pet shop owned by Orville. At one point, Orville offered Tony a drug that could, quote, speed you up, end quote. A coworker of Tony's, Charles Gabbard, corroborated this statement, saying he saw the conversation between Tony and Orville as he was carrying his tools to the truck. Tony then came over and told him Orville was trying to sell him a heart stimulant. Tony said Orville had some vials of clear liquid he claimed came from a pharmacy and had to be administered face-to-face. Orville also told him it could be mixed with crank, and Tony also said that Orville appeared to be high at the time of this encounter. Now, in May of 1995, Orville's nursing license was suspended for 5 years for giving unauthorized injections. And in September of 95, officials began exhuming the 15 patients that had witnesses claiming Orville had injected them just before dying. None of these bodies had any signs of a heart attack or clotting in the lung, so this proved they were murdered. In December 1995, investigators found evidence that Orville had potassium chloride in the trash area of the home he shared with Andrew Harris. There were 44 items of evidence recovered. Among them were needles and partially used or empty bottles of potassium chloride. In April 1997, based on information from Orville's nephew, a search warrant was obtained for a 1987 Chevy van owned by Orville Sr. and Anna Majors, Orville's parents. There were three containers of potassium chloride found in the vehicle. One was half full, and the other two had a small amount of liquid left. Orville had been driving this van when his vehicle had not been running. The hospital personnel stated that there would be no reason for these bottles to have ever been removed from the hospital. According to Maureen Love, another nurse from VCH, once a container of potassium had been used, it was thrown away, even if there was some left in the bottle. There was never any paperwork filled out for any of the unused portions. It was just simply thrown away. This seems very callous, in my opinion. Anyone could go through the trash and take those unused bottles. Nurse Jackie Donald also stated this was normal practice when potassium chloride was used. When the containers of potassium chloride recovered from Orville's possession were examined, it showed there were at least one and up to eight punctures in the rubber stoppers. Now, by all reports from the hospital staff, these containers were only punctured once by the hospital and then thrown away per their policy. The excess punctures show evidence that they were used more than once. Investigators learned that the hospital staff, in fact, had noticed the potassium chloride and epinephrine shortages from the red night box as well as from the night box on the medical surgical floor. The pharmacy actually stopped stocking the potassium chloride in the night box on the medical surgical floor due to the increased expense of having to continually restock it. But again, it was never reported. After 2 years of investigating, Orville was arrested in December of 1997. While they believed he had murdered between 100 and 130 people, they only charged him with 7 counts of murder because they didn't want to overwhelm the jury. I'm sorry, but what? Okay, I get that that's a lot of people, but families want justice. But by only charging him with 7 counts of murder, what about the other possible 123 families of those dead at the hands of this monster? I just can't with the justice system sometimes. At Orville's trial in 1999, there were 79 people called to testify. Paul Havlin, a former friend, told how Orville said how much he hated old people and how they should all be gassed. Another friend, Kenny Hoffeditz, said Orville told him the same thing and that all old people are a waste. Of the others testifying, some said they heard Orville say, "I'm just waiting on the patient to die," and referring to the families of the patients as white trash and just a bunch of whiners. This man was a real piece of work. October 2000, Orville was convicted of 6 of the 7 charges of murder. The jury was deadlocked on the 7th charge, as they said it took the patient longer to die than the others. What? Okay. He was sentenced to 360 years in prison. Judge Ernest Yelton described Orville's crimes as, quote, "diabolical acts," end quote, and, quote, "a parallel of evil at its most wicked," end quote, and concluded that, quote, "the maximum sentence is the minimum sentence in this case," end quote. VCH was renamed West Central Community Hospital after all this came out. Was slapped with wrongful death suits by families of 80 patients who died at Orville's hands. Most of them settled. The hospital was fined $80,000 for negligence and code violations and forced to shut down because they lost their accreditation. In 2009, it was taken over and renamed Union Hospital Clinton. Orville appealed to the Indiana Supreme Court in 2002. They let the verdict stand. He served his sentence in Indiana State Prison in Michigan City and died of heart failure on September 24, 2017, while arguing with correctional staff. My thoughts on this case? Well, I feel the hospital failed these patients and their families, and the justice system failed most of them as well. He was convicted, and that's wonderful, but I still think there should have been charges brought up for all of the victims, not just seven. It's so horrible that things like this go unnoticed, or even noticed, just ignored, in hospitals, where we expect to be cared for, not murdered. I think there's more that can be done. The hospital should have a better method of disposing of unused drugs, a better way of keeping them less accessible. There were several reports calling this waste of a human an angel of death, and I always thought people that were labeled this way were mercy killers, ultimately attempting to help people in their minds. Well, I was wrong. There are several murderers, serial killers, labeled angels of death. These monsters are nowhere near angels of any kind, so I would not call him that. He's a monster. This case really stunned me. So let me know your thoughts at Bloodshed and Bagels on Instagram or Bloodshed Bagels on Twitter. Let's see what next case will be. Unusual weapon of choice. That should be interesting. So don't forget to check back next week and see what I come up with for an unusual weapon of choice. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider subscribing and don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Bloodshed and Bagels for more information on cases. Email us at bloodshedandbagels@gmail.com to submit cases you would like us to cover. See you guys later. Bye. Thank you.